alcoholic. I was hoping to have the steps and the traditions read a little while. Give me time to group up that back there. But just right into it. Y'all don't read them at the end or anything. I'll have to stop a little soon, dude. Yeah, my sobriety date is May 24th, 2005. I was looking in my my home group is Jaywalkers in Richmond. See Billy and James come up every once in a while and join the fellowship up there. It's good to be up here. The last time I came up here, I may need a second to catch my breath. Last time I came up here, John Pine spoke, and I think I was probably just a couple months, maybe a few months sober. There was a guy made a fire across the way right here, and but it was Ed McGuire was with us. He's since passed away, but it was just a group of guys that I still see today and hang out with, and we're a big part of each other's lives, and without them, I don't know if I'd be sober today, and I hope to, remain in their lives, and I hope they're in my life for a long time, because that'll probably mean we're all sober. But that was a beautiful day as well as today. It's a real nice ride coming out here. But I was looking, and I was telling you my sobriety date. I was looking in my big book. When was it? Friday night, and I have, every time I got sober, I was determined I was going to stay sober, and my resolve was very high. I've got like 5 or 6 different sobriety dates written down in a list, and those were just the ones that I wrote down. Hopefully the one at the bottom is the last one I'm going to write down, but it's amazing. Each time I wrote one down, I was determined I was going to stay sober. That wasn't the case. I'm the youngest of 5 kids. Grew up in Richmond. The church where my home group is at is, I used to ride my bike in that parking lot and all that, so I haven't really moved out of Richmond. I was the baby of the family. All my brothers and sisters, had a good time in high school, and I always wanted to be like them. And if there was a party at the house, I wanted to be around it and drink. I don't know if it was the party atmosphere. I think it was the party atmosphere I really liked. I started my first drink. There were about 3 or 4 times that I can't really place a finger on which time I was the first time, but there were about 3 or 4 times where, I was probably like in 8th grade, something like that. And, I remember I had a great time each time I drank. Well, one time I was in 9th grade in a party, and I remember just being able to talk to girls, and I felt like I was the life of the party. I love that feeling. Whether I was the life of the party, I don't know. In my eyes, I thought I was. I thought everybody loved me and wanted to be around me. And so I tried to, tried to drink as much as possible whenever I could, because I always thought I was on top of my game. I don't remember, a lot of people say they didn't, they felt like they didn't fit in and all that. I don't know if I had this huge feeling of not fitting in. But I do remember that when I drank, I loved it. I lit up. I was rarely in a bad mood when I was drinking until the end. And at the end, I would go to a bar, and I remember just sitting there and not talking to anybody for about the first hour. I wouldn't look at anybody. The bar, nobody would attempt to talk to me. I wouldn't try to strike up any conversation. But after like 3 or 4 drinks, I would start revving. Oh, you couldn't get me away from you. You'd be like, get this guy out of my face. So, at the end of my drinking, that was you know, the last year or so, I couldn't even go to bars without getting kicked out or cut off or walking out on a tab or getting into a fight or whatever it was. But I couldn't go into I pretty much had to drink at home. I didn't have a license either, so that made it tough to go to bars. In high school, I drank as much as I possibly could. Drinking and girls and stuff like that were, my buddies would do their schoolwork and stuff like that, and I didn't care about anything. The sports had gone out the window. I don't know if it was necessarily because of drinking, because I wasn't drinking all that much in high school, but just I didn't have any goals. I didn't have any ambitions. I was really good at sports when I was younger. You got to practice, and you can't just pick up a baseball bat and be good that next year if you haven't done anything the whole offseason. I remember a buddy of mine, I did a research project. We both had the same English class, and our English research paper was due on the next day. And he had the computer, so I went over to his house, and we were both going to write our papers up. And I hadn't done anything. I was reading while he was writing. He had done a lot of research for his paper, and all he had to do was basically finalize the final print. And I had to basically write my paper. And, I'm still reading Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, is what it was. He finishes his paper. He knew me real well. He finishes his paper and brings out, he had just gotten back from vacation in Jamaica and brought back Cruzan rum or Bacardi rum, and he's like, "Hey man, I got this bottle of rum." And my research paper went out the window. He ended up going to class the next day, and I was over at his house. I ended up getting sick and crashing at his place that night. Woke up 2 hours late for class, and his mother had to write my paper up for me that next day. I don't even know if I turned it in that day or not, but that was just typical of, when anybody brought alcohol in front of me, that's what I was doing, no matter what. The research paper of my senior year, it just, nothing was important. And that's the way my life went until I got sober. My father died. My father was a child of an alcoholic. My dad, he had over a year in this program at one point. I found I was stealing money from my mother about 4 years ago, looking through dresser drawers and all that stuff, and I found a cigar box of old coins and change. I'm sure I took the old coins, but there were my father's chips. There was a blue chip in there, a red chip, and stuff like that. And that was when I was like 17 or 18, or maybe 16, that he had a year sober in the program. It was a great year. I do remember that. He didn't stay sober. He ended up committing suicide. He doused the inside of his car with gasoline and lit a match, and he was very drunk when he did it. When that happened, I was 21, and it didn't throw up any red flags. I didn't cut my drinking down. I got a friend of mine, his brother got a DUI and almost died in a DUI. And he quit drinking like that. He hadn't drank in like, I don't know, 5 years since that happened. But he was able to, put it down. It scared the crap out of him. But, not me. I didn't realize anything like that. I just kept on drinking. In fact, my drinking got a little worse. My mom started saying stuff about it and sent me on a retreat. It was called Blackwater. And we went camping for about 3 weeks and went canoeing and rock climbing, and it was with heroin addicts, and one guy smoked crack, one guy drank a lot like I did, and it was kind of a go-find-yourself trip. It was with about eight guys, and it was great. I realized I could have a good time without drinking, and I think I had a goal of like 6 months. I didn't know what alcoholism was. They didn't really teach you about it. It was just kind of a go find yourself. Get away, realize that you can have a good time without drinking. And I had a goal of 6 months to quit drinking, and I think I went 5 months and 3 weeks. So that 5 months and 3 weeks was good. If I achieved a goal 95% of the way, that was considered achieving a goal 100% in my mind. So, yeah, so, well, and March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, was at that 5 month, 3 week point. So, why go that extra week, you know? So, my drinking was pretty bad, but not too bad back then. It was mainly partying. I loved to, I was at every party. There was never a party I wasn't at. My life consisted of working as little as possible and going, and drinking as much as I could. I started doing construction, and that was perfect for me because I could, everybody else drank. I was always the guy wanting to go get the beer at the end of the day and get the case of beer and, bring it back to the job site while everybody's packing up the tools, and we sit there for 2 hours and, talk and drink beer. And I look forward to that. I would get up out of bed to do that. And that just, anyway. I couldn't stay at a place for too long where I was living. I would go back and forth from my mother to, I would get an apartment for a little while, then I would move back in with mom, moved in with my sister at one point. She kicked me out, but there was no stability, there was no no direction, no discipline, no anything. Kind of lost train of thought there. Give me some help, Jeremy. I've told you a lot about my life.
It got worse.
It did get worse. Telling me about this one guy that I used to hang out with, and it was a friend of my brother's, and he was like, man, Chip got sober, why don't you talk to this guy. And every time there would always be, I quit drinking dozens of times, there would always be an episode where I'd almost get a DUI, or I'd get into an accident, or I'd get into a fight, or I'd embarrass some friends, embarrass everybody around me, and, I'd wake up the next morning with my head in my hands going, what have I done? And, I'd make a resolve to make a decision to quit drinking. And I always thought I could do it on my own. For years, I thought I could do it on my own. My brother, my first meeting actually was at a hospital down here in Charlottesville with a guy named Chip, redhead fellow. I don't know if you may know him or not. But he had a couple years sober, and I was scared to death when I went into the meeting. I didn't think I belonged there. there's one guy. I haven't seen him since, but he I don't know how he knew it was my first meeting, but he knew. He kind of looked at me and said, "There are three types of people that come into these rooms. And first type is somebody that comes in, realizes they have a problem, picks up a white chip and doesn't drink again. The second type, come in, pick up a white chip, and go back out, relapse, come back in, may take a few tries, but they eventually will come back in and quit drinking. And then there's a third type that comes in, relapses, and never gets it, and ends up dying. That happened to my father, and it's happened to, a few people that I've seen in the program, just in my short 2 years of being here. But hopefully I'm the second type, because I picked up several white chips. There are a lot of times I didn't pick up white chips. I was too embarrassed. I thought everybody was looking at me. After that, I think I quit drinking for like 9 months or like 8 months. It was 8 months and 3 weeks during that time my first meeting here. There are a lot of stories I'm skipping on. How long have I been up here? 15 minutes. I've taken up the whole hour before, and I'm already like 30 years old in this story, and I'm only 33. I had a lot of coffee. I guess I'm talking all night. I would try to. That began the coming in and out of AA. I've heard people say you don't come in and out of AA. I was never in AA. I would go to meetings and just basically go to meetings. Go when I wanted to. Sometimes I'd pick up a white chip. I'd go to a meeting every day. I'd go to 90 and 90. Sometimes I'd go to just one a week. It just, whatever I felt like doing. And, each time, sometimes I'd have 2 days sobriety. Sometimes I'd go to a meeting and then I'd drink that night. Sometimes a couple times I had almost 9 months sobriety. A couple times 6 months. Something would happen. I'd usually, things would start getting better. I'd be able to hold down a job for a little while longer. My mom wouldn't be on my back for, she'd co-sign for a car, and, I was always hearing about that. I would get the fire from under me. And things would start getting better, so I'd quit AA. And eventually I'd drink every time, probably shortly thereafter. Sometimes here and there I'd have a sponsor, and here and there I wouldn't have a sponsor. But I got my last year of drinking was... It was pretty bad. I had about 5 months in the program, 5.5 months, and I'd stopped going to meetings, and I continued to do the same things. I would always still go over to my buddy's house and watch them drink and watch football or watch the Rays and just act like I hang out with the same people that I used to hang out with, and continue to do the same things. I would continue to go to bars, but I just wasn't drinking. And that doesn't work. Didn't work for me anyway. So I, You know, I had 5 months, 5.5 months sobriety, and I was going to a NASCAR race, and I bought a 12-pack of Cokes and put it in a cooler and had ice and all that, and I was ready to go. We were hanging out waiting for my boss to come out of the house, and one of the guys cracked open a beer. I was like, give me a beer before I change my mind. And I probably had over 30 beers that night. I definitely picked up right where I left off. I ended up passing out and in the parking lot, and you know, you were one of the only cars left in the parking lot. Just typical, typical alcoholic fashion. I knocked down a girl, and I think she had to. I didn't hit her. I was walking or walking backwards and ran over somebody, and I was so drunk I knocked two girls down or something, and I didn't want to get arrested, and I just hightailed it out of there. And it was just stuff like that I did. I'd embarrass myself, I'd embarrass my buddies. The last year, you know, that began the last, like, year and a month of just drinking. I would go to work about 3 days a week. My boss had a crack problem, so he understood my dilemma. I'd tell him that I'm going to quit and all this. And, every time I'd get my job back. I got fired numerous times last year, but I'd tell him I was going to quit drinking, and I was sincere every single time. And I would have bet what little money I had on it, but never did I do anything to stay sober. Really, I always tried my own program. I wasn't going to work. I didn't have a license. I would pick up an 18-pack of beer, come home. Drugs are part of my story. I would do drugs, and I had, like, this was like just a daily routine of coming home. I had over 100 beer cans around. I had this Lazy Boy swivel chair that went back and forth, and if you pick the chair up, it was just a perfect circle of beer cans, and there was one pathway that went straight to the kitchen. And I remember one night I was so drunk I ashed in these. I used to dip tobacco too, and whatever was in these cans, and they had been there for God knows how long. I'd go around and shake them. If they had any liquid in them, I'd drink it. I had a line of ants. I hadn't done my dishes in 4 months. I had a line of ants coming down from my ceiling to my sink. And I had a can of Raid. I went through a whole can of Raid. I would just walk to the bathroom, spray the ants if I saw any, and then go to the bathroom. And I hadn't, I'd use the toilet. The plumbing didn't work in that bathroom. So I would have to fill the back of it up with three trash cans full of water from my tub. And I would only do that every third time I used it. I just didn't care. I had a crackhead come over to my house one night, and he was like, "Dude, this place is a fucking wreck." I quit drinking a couple weeks after that. But it was a mess. It was very bad. I would eat milk bones sometimes for dinner if I didn't have any food with mustard on them. That wasn't bad. But I woke up one morning. I remember I got really trashed one night, and I did the, I was rolling around and crying, and please God help me, and all this, and I woke up. It wasn't a really special morning. I had done that numerous times. Just poor, pitiful me, I called a guy the next morning. Well, I called my boss up the next morning, and I was like, I'm not coming into work today. He's like, what's new? And I said, I'm not coming in ever again. So it wasn't a big deal to him, but I did have to quit my job because I did get drunk with those guys on a daily basis. So I quit my job, and I called up my old sponsor, and in typical AA fashion, he came and picked me up like he had done a few times before, but I had drunk called him at 2 o'clock in the morning a few times, and he always answered the phone, and he always was nice and would do anything for me, and I always knew that AA was there. Nobody ever kicked me out of AA. Nobody ever made me feel unwelcome in AA. I knew I could go to AA. And I did. I went, hooked up with a guy that I had known previously, and, he took me to meetings, and I got a sponsor. He didn't pay enough attention to me, so I decided to get a new sponsor. Currently over there. That's why I'm telling the truth tonight, because he's sitting right there. But I asked him to sponsor me. It was at Jay Walker's on a Friday, and he took me into a room and sat me down and told me. He said, I forgot what he said. He said, "Are you serious? Are you done?" Or something like that. I don't even remember. But he said, you got to wear collared shirts to meetings. You got to wear pants. Look respectable. You got to get a home group. You got to get a job in that home group. We're going to get together and start going over the big book. You're going to have to do the steps. Typical things they tell us in these rooms. And I said yes. And I pretty much stuck to most of them, I think. I don't think he saw me wearing a t-shirt in a meeting for a while. But at that point I was willing to do anything. I was definitely at the end of my rope. I would have been home. My mother, owned the house that I was living in. She rented it to me, and, the last 2 years of my drinking, and if that weren't the case, I definitely would have been homeless. I had been kicked out of my sister's house, both my sister's houses. Neither one of my brothers would have wanted anything to do with me, nor did I want to bring myself around them. I have two brothers that live in Woodlake, and which is like 15 minutes away from where I live, and they have children. My oldest brother has 4 kids, my other brother has 2 kids, and I hadn't seen the children in a year and a half. One brother I would talk to every 3 months if I accepted his call. The other brother I didn't talk to. We're a pretty close family. Now we are. But I had alienated myself from everybody, basically except my mom, and that was because I had to pay her rent if I did, when I did. And she knew she let me live there. She knew exactly what would happen if she had kicked me out. So I sat down with my sponsor. You know, we started going over the big book. My job was I got a job at my home group that was setting up chairs on Friday night. And you know, I mean, I had never taken anything seriously in my life, like a job. I didn't care if I got fired. I didn't care if I had a job, if I didn't have a job, whatever. I never cared about anything. And this job, I cared about. I got there at 5:45. The meeting was at 7:00. If you've been to that meeting, it's sometimes it can be over 100 people. So we'd set up over 100 chairs in a circle, and I was. There was another person that helped me set them up, and I was guarded. She just got to the point where she would just take them off the rack, and I would end up setting them up because I would go behind her and fix the chairs with her. So I one time wanted to get up and look down. I thought it was a perfect circle one night. I was good at setting up those chairs, but I did take pride in that. I took pride in that job. It was like clockwork that I was there. Nobody ever worried about if the chairs were going to be set up or not if I was on the job. and that's today. Nobody worries about them. I make coffee for that meeting now, and, you know, coffee will be made at that meeting. on time, it'll be ready. It may be a little stronger on other nights than it should be, but the coffee is always there. I do take that seriously. And that's probably because my sponsor takes his sobriety seriously. He's dependable. He's always there. He's set an example for me and the other guys he sponsors. And I fear that if I don't do what I'm supposed to do, that he's not going to be my sponsor anymore. So that's enough about you. I never knew, you know, I had other sponsors that told me to get a job in a meeting, and you know, I never took their advice. I would start going over the steps here and there. One time I got to, like, the sixth or seventh step, the seventh step. You know, all of them told me the right thing to do, get a home group, get a job in your home group, and they led me down the right path. I just decided not to do it because I thought I could go to 3 or 4 meetings a week and hang out with the girls and stay sober. But it wasn't until I started doing what the sponsor told me to do and did I stay sober. So I had a real tough time. I was very outgoing when I was drinking, but you know, when I wasn't drinking, it's harder. It's definitely harder for me to get to know people. And when I got that job in the home group, you meet the coffee maker. I'd meet, you know, the other person setting up chairs. There'd be a literature person there, and I'd just get to the meeting early, and you'd start, you know, it was a lot easier for me to speak to 2 people than it was 100 people on a Friday night, you know, and sit there and think everybody's looking at you and watching you and actually cares about what you're doing, and nobody really gives a crap, but, you know, it was a lot easier for me to talk to people, and that's what getting the job in the home group did. The main thing for me was it helped me get to know just a couple people here and there. And now I feel a part of my home group, and, you know, it's like family over there. So I definitely don't sit around and watch football with my drinking buddies anymore and not drink. That's not part of my life. I was about 6 or 7, 6 months sober. I got fired from a job, and I wanted to drink that day. I thought I was going to drink. I got fired in basically around lunchtime or so. And I had to set up chairs. It was on a Friday that I got fired. I had to set up chairs that night. I was like, I got to set up chairs. I didn't want to let these people down, because if I drank, I knew I'd come back to AA. If I drank, I didn't want to let these people down. So I went and set up chairs that night, and the drinking thought was gone. So I really do think that the job saved me from drinking that day. But anyway, step one, I guess I'll go over the steps. I've never done this before, but step one, I knew I was powerless. I knew I was powerless every time. I knew that I could not drink successfully. I was never one to pound on the bar like it says in the big book and wonder, you know, how it happened. Because I, you know, every time I drank, I knew I was going to get completely obliterated. There was maybe a couple times where I did, you know, I remember one time I went to a bar. I told everybody I was just going to have a couple of beers that night, and I had a buddy of mine cheering me. He's like, "Yeah, you did it, T." And I did. I had a couple of beers that night. I was probably 25 years old. I was like, "Oh, I'm going home tonight. I got a long day tomorrow." So I did it a couple of times where I would just drink a couple, but it was just a test, I think. But you know, I knew every single time I was going to go out and get hammered. That was my objective. Especially the last year, I was not trying to moderate. You know, I stayed away from any type of family event where I would have to not drink. Or Christmas, one time, I parked my car in the garage and turned my cell phone off, and I didn't even see my family one Christmas. I don't know if they tried to call me or not, but I definitely knew I was powerless. I knew my life was unmanageable. I think that's, you know, you don't walk through these doors, like people say, on a winning streak, you know. So step two, came to believe. That was a little tougher for me. I didn't come to believe. This was years ago. My boss, I was working for a good company. They were religious. I think they were Baptists. Good people. He knew I was having trouble with drinking and girl. I'd just broken up with my girlfriend. I was just really down. He'd always try to get me to go to church and stuff like that. And he gave me a book called "What's So Amazing About Grace." And I was driving home, man. I started crying. I felt the power. I felt the light. I felt the power. I mean, it really was. I'm not joking about it. It was actually a powerful feeling of, you know, I felt this presence of God. I felt like everything was going to be okay. I drove home. My girlfriend that had just broken up with me, I called her up and told her about the experience, and we never got back together as a result. But you know, it was a really cool feeling. But I didn't follow it up with anything. It was just kind of something that happened that I never followed up with. So I think that feeling went away shortly thereafter. Anyway, that was probably, I don't know what that was. Anyway, step three. I did step three with my sponsor in the big book. When I turned my will and my life over, I was just basically going on to the fourth step. I wanted to quit drinking. I wanted to stay sober. I wanted for my life to get better. So therefore, I was going to do the steps because I was told if I did the steps, then I would, I'd have higher power. Went on to step four. Did the inventory, which I'm supposed to do right now. Supposed to be doing one right now. I haven't done yet. Did my inventory with my sponsor. I went through the steps relatively quickly. This one I stopped on for a while. I think I spent about probably 2 months on it, so we didn't do any work in the big book until I had finished my fourth step. I didn't want to look at anything I had done. I hadn't really hurt anybody too badly, but I still didn't want to. I just didn't want to do it. My sponsor got on me, and finally I did do it, and we went to Starbucks and sat there for about 3 hours and went over my fifth step. And, after all the stuff, we closed up the big book and he said, "Do you want to be that guy anymore?" And I said, "No, I don't." The sixth and seventh step, I went home, did the seventh step prayer. I had the hour alone. And I did. I felt good. I felt very good that night. Not really euphoric or anything, but slowly, I started feeling, a higher power come into my life. I started getting more into taking the prayers and stuff like that in the morning, meditation in the morning, more seriously. Step eight. Made a list of all persons we had harmed. I did that. Step nine, I did all my amends to my immediate family first. I had hurt them the most. My brothers were, I think I did my ninth step a little early with my brothers. They were going to Guantanamo Bay in December. So I, we all went to Cracker Barrel and I made amends to them. And, they just wanted me to stay sober. And, it didn't really matter what I had done or what I hadn't done. They just, and everybody in my family just, they want me to be happy and stay sober. And staying in AA is what's going to keep me sober. Tenth step, I could probably take a little better personal inventory at this point. That can always improve. 11th step, sought through prayer and meditation. I pray in the morning. I pray at night, not every night, but I try to do some meditation in the morning and get myself right for the day ahead. The 12th step. I do sponsor a guy. He's actually going to be a year sober next Saturday. And a lot of my service work is, carrying the messages. I make coffee for the home group. We do an alkathon, a Thanksgiving Day alkathon. That's coming up here in a couple months, and it's just staying active in AA. I've kind of dropped a little bit from it. I had a conversation with my grand sponsor Friday night, and you know, I need to, things are going pretty well for me. I just got a new vehicle. My job's going really well. My relationship is going great. And these are all things that's all I wanted. You know, I didn't, that's all I wanted. And things are starting to kind of smooth out for me. I don't need to call my sponsor up every 5 minutes because I'm having a rough day. And I've been kind of resting on my laurels. I need to remember what got me to this point. And that is 4 meetings a week. That's, the AA that I used to do is not the type of AA that got me sober. I've tried that. I've tried 2 meetings a week. I've tried not having a sponsor. I've tried hanging out with old buddies. I've tried dating girls in sobriety. I've tried not having a home group. Whatever it is, I've tried it. And the only AA that got me sober is the AA that I'm doing now, and that's staying active. And that's what I need to be doing. Anyway, I think I'm kind of rambling at this point. Billy, thank you for asking me, and good to be up here. Thanks.